Can you tell me when it was, Mr. Bangs, that you were called up, approximately?
Christmas 1951.
And you were 18 then, were you?
I was 18 to do national service, yes.
What was your reaction when you got your call-up papers?
Well, I was expecting them, naturally, and in a sense, excited, and looking forward to it.
Why were you so excited?
Well, I was in a humdrum sort of a job, and national service was spoke about with your friends, etc., so you couldn't wait to get in and do your little 2 years. And so, you know, it was looking forward to something different from everyday life.
Was it army life or active service?
No, I think it was the army life then, because nobody contemplated actual active service. I believe at that particular time there wasn't no active service going on around the world, I don't think, apart from probably Malaya. It was just odd bits. So it was just a question of wanting to do your national service, you know, meet lots of more friends and have generally an exciting life, I think, for 2 years.
So, what was your initial training like?
It was quite severe. I was assigned to the infantry, and so the basic training was quite an ordeal, really. But if you meet some friends and you find you can cope okay, then it's you take the rough with the smooth, and it was okay. I enjoyed it.
In what ways was it so severe?
Well, the discipline was strict. I found out that the training was a little bit more strict, and the discipline was stricter if you was in the infantry, as opposed to a corps, you know, Royal Engineers or Pioneers or whatever. So the infantry was slightly different. But it was varied, and it was quite an interesting time, really.
Whereabouts did you do the training?
Beverley, which is only 9 miles away. But it seemed a lot further, I mean.
How were you treated by the NCOs during the initial training?
I would think very much the same as any other young soldier. At a distance, they weren't all that friendly, but for the first 2 or 3 weeks, and then gradually you got to know them and they got to know you, and so things did ease up a bit, the discipline. And so, generally speaking, I was fortunate we had good NCOs in my particular platoon. So I had no complaints whatsoever, really.
Were they abusive?
Not at all. No, they were very helpful. They used to come round on the night time in the barrack room and chat to you and talk over what you were going to do tomorrow or what you'd done the previous day. And that was quite helpful. I could speak very highly of my particular NCOs.
Did you find that some of your comrades amongst the recruits just couldn't make the grade?
There's one or two that's always a little bit slower to grasp things than the majority. I felt a little bit sorry for those. There's one or two farmers' lads from out the country, and they just couldn't even get the hang of march, you know, doing ordinary basic drill. I felt a little bit sorry for those, but the NCOs was very understanding with them, and we all mucked in together, and we got through it.
So they weren't deliberately humiliated if they found it difficult?
Certainly not, not at all. I had no experience at all. If there was one or two cases, it was very exceptional.
Were there any who were thrown out because they couldn't make the grade?
Not in my particular platoon. No, I don't think there was. I don't recall any. We all did our 6 weeks or 8 weeks basic training together, and I think we was all sent en bloc to Germany, Berlin in Germany. And as I remember, I went with the same 50 chaps who was in our platoon as I joined up with it. I don't think there was any left at all.
Were they all from the Hull area?
I would think 80%, although we did have quite a few, well, the other 20% was from some even from London, and they was hoping to, they was doing the basic training with us, and then they was going on to join the PECO, or some was even going for a commission, but they was all doing their basic training with us. But I think the 80% was from the Yorkshire area, not necessarily from round Hull, but from the Yorkshire area.
Was there any aspect of the initial training which you found hard yourself? Or that you didn't take to?
No, not really. I enjoyed the physical side of it because I was young and fit. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the weapon training. I didn't particularly enjoy the drill, but nobody does. No, there was nothing hazardous about it at all. Not that I can recall.
You said that nobody enjoyed the drill, but did you not find that once you became proficient at drill, you got a certain pleasure out of it?
I particularly didn't, no. I didn't enjoy the discipline and the marching. And probably I wasn't that good at it, I don't know. But I didn't enjoy that, and I don't think any of us really did. It wasn't something to look forward to, drill, whereas the rest of the activities were. The rest of the parades, but drill was something that was dreaded, you know, as far as we was concerned. It was all left, right, left, right, about turn, right, turn, left, turn, and of course you had to be smart and inspected, and it wasn't something to look forward to at all.
What kind of weapons were you trained on?
Well, we was trained on the ordinary Lee Enfield rifle, 303, and the Bren gun, and the small arms, I believe the Sten gun. And yeah, I think that was it in basic training. It was later on that we got onto 2-inch and 3-inch mortars and anti-tank weapons, but in basic training it's just the rifle and the Bren guns.
And grenades?
Not in basic training, I don't think, until we got to Berlin, which was sort of advanced training, and then we went on to grenades. I don't think we did grenades in basic training. I may be wrong. Memory isn't all that good.
What kind of duties? What regiment were you in, I should say?
I joined up with the East Yorks until I got to Germany. Then I was transferred to the Duke of Wellington's. From Berlin to Minden. This was because the Duke of Wellington's was going to Korea, and we joined the Dukes in Minden. After I had 6 months in the East Yorks.
What kind of duties did you have in Germany? Just the advanced training?
Advanced training, and there again, it was the usual parades and guards and. It was very security conscious in Berlin, so there's lots of guard duties, which again wasn't something to look forward to. But generally, it was schemes and manoeuvres and further training.
What did the attitude of German people, German civilians, towards you seem to be?
At that time, there was a little bit hostile, I got the impression, although we didn't come into contact with them a lot. We was about 5 or 6 miles outside Berlin, to a place called Kladau. And we we only got out about once a fortnight to go into Berlin. And once there, we went straight to the Nafi Club. So we didn't have a lot to do with civilians, although at the odd time we did go for a drink. I must admit they weren't all that friendly, but this was just after the war, this was 1951, so they had good reason not to be, I suppose. But with no complaints, though, we wasn't abused or anything.
How did their unfriendliness show itself, though?
I would think the odd occasion you went in a bar and there was a hostile look sort of a thing and talking amongst themselves and muttering, and you got the impression that they would rather you wasn't there. This was if you was in a typical German beer keller or bar.
So you didn't come across any open hostility?
Not open hostility, no, not at all, really. No. But,
did you and your comrades behave yourselves in Germany?
Yes, certainly. My particular crowd did. There was one or two that misbehaved, obviously, but we felt we were only in for 2 years and make the best of it, and we realised that you couldn't win by misbehaving, not especially in Germany, because it was really, really tight there.
Did you have anything to do with the Russian zone of Berlin?
We used to do a guard at Spandau Prison, and our particular barracks was on the edge of the Russian sector, and so we could see the Russian guards in the distance, but with strict orders not to communicate or even wave to them or anything. We just did our little bit, and with nothing whatsoever to do with the Russian guards, although there was only a barbed wire fence separating our camp from the Russian sector, and a few miles up the road, if we happened to get up the wrong bus stop, we could find ourselves in the Russian sector, just a little bit past. But to the best of my knowledge, that never happened. So
did you never go into the Russian sector?
Oh, no. No, I was never allowed nowhere near it. No.
Did you see any of the famous prisoners like Hess and Spandau?
No, it was there at the time, but I certainly never saw him.
When you were transferred to the
Duke of Wellington's,
did you find it much different from the East Yorkshires, or just the same?
I found it much different. I enjoyed it. We was a little bit apprehensive at first with joining a new regiment, but I was with all my friends who I'd joined up with. And once we got there and settled in, it was a much more relaxed atmosphere in Minden rather than Berlin. And consequently, I started enjoying it immediately, and I soon took to the Duke of Wellington's.
How did the actual regiment itself differ from the East Yorkshires?
I don't think there was quite so much discipline. And I thought it was a more relaxed regiment. There was a better relationship between NCOs and officers and the other ranks. It was a slightly different setup, I thought. I quite enjoyed it.
How did you react when you heard that you were going to Korea?
Again, we were a little bit apprehensive, mainly because we were so ignorant of Korea, and we didn't really know what it was all about or what we was going to. Like most people, I don't think, as I recall, I'd heard of Korea. I didn't even know where it was, and we'd no idea of the conditions. The only thing we knew was the other little bits that we read in the newspaper. And so naturally I didn't quite know what was going to, although I suppose there was a feeling of excitement there, but we were going with all our friends, so that made things bearable, really.
Were you scared at the thought of being in action?
No, I don't think so. No, I never considered that. You know, it was just part of army life, I suppose.
Were you given any kind of briefing as to the causes of the situation in Korea?
Sadly, no. No, I think that was a big drawback. We was kept in, whether it was deliberately, I don't know, but we was kept in complete ignorance about it until we actually got there. We still didn't know the severity of the winter, or what the climate was like, or what the terrain was like. We didn't know anything really until we suddenly landed in Korea, and then you found out the hard way. That was something that I always felt a little bit strongly about.
Were you given any special equipment to go to Korea with?
Equipment in the way of clothing.
Or anything else? Clothing or anything else?
No, not that I recall. Part of the clothing I believe we got on the troop ship, which was a winter clothing. As far as I can recall.
What did the winter clothing consist of?
Winter consisted of extra double padded trousers, underclothes, string vests, lamb's wool trousers as underwear, boots with thick inner soles, pullovers, combat suits, and a parka. Big hooded fur parka.
What was your reaction when you got all this?
Well, by this time we gathered that the winter was going to be pretty cold, and I think it was in November time when we landed, and so it wasn't too bad then, but we realised that it was going to get a lot colder, so we got our clothes and couldn't wait to try it on.
Was it November 51 or 52 that you got there?
It'd be November 51.
How had you actually got out there? What route did you take?
A troop ship from Southampton. It was the Devonshire.
And through the Suez Canal?
Through the Suez, yes. So the Mediterranean, Suez, Red Sea, stopping off at Aden, Colombo, Singapore and Hong Kong.
Which battalion of the Duke of Wellington's was it?
1st Battalion.
Did you have any special experiences on the way?
No, not really. We was quite busy on the way. We were still doing our training, a lot of weapon training and firing off the end of the ship, and the only experiences we got was when we went ashore at Aden and Colombo, or what have you, which was quite new to us. We'd never been away from home before, so everything was pretty exciting and different there. But no drastic experiences, I think, really. Not that I can recall, you know.
Did you land at Busan or Japan?
Busan. We landed at Busan, I can't tell you the exact date, sometime, I would guess, in the middle of October. And from there we went by train to a transit camp.
What kind of impact did Korea make on you when you first got there? What were your first impressions of the place?
First impressions, difficult, I remember. I remember now that it was appeared to be a little bit backward nation to what we'd just left, but that wasn't true, of course. But all we saw of it was the countryside and the people, the old men in the fields with the basic implements working. And so we gathered it was somewhere behind us in that respect. Which, you know, of course it was, you know, and we could see by the clothing and the general appearance of the people.
Did there seem to be much sign that the country had been through a bad time, through war?
Not at all, no, I didn't notice it at all. And until we got to probably Camp Britannia, you said the odd little bits of barbed wire and what have you, but there was no signs where at that time that they'd been occupied. No sign at all.
No signs of devastation?
No sign of devastation that I saw it, although in Busan we did of course see the shanty town there, which was, I believe, the direct result of the occupation by the North Koreans. And that was a pretty traumatic experience, seeing the shanty town and the children and other people living in cardboard shelters, as they were. That was pretty awful, really. You know, we'd never seen anything like that before. There was little kids running towards the train, asking for food. You know, who's throwing food out the window to them? And you could see them pick it up and stuff it in their jersey or under their coats and dash away with it to the shanty towns.
What kind of food did you throw to them?
Any tin food we get hold of. There was tins of cheese and beans and there were tins of cigarettes some lads was throwing there if they didn't smoke, and chocolate and whatever food we had that was wrapped up or in cans, we would throw them to the children.
So the troops were rather generous then?
I think they'd like to have been more generous, but I'm talking about as the train was actually travelling, and of course you only had a limited amount of food anyway to spare. But we just threw all we could.
Did the officers object to you doing this?
Not that I recall. There was no officers around. We was all on a long train, and there was probably one officer per carriage, and we was all looking out the windows, etc., so they couldn't really do much about it.
What was this Britannia camp you went to?
It is a transit camp where you go to get kitted out, and I think when I said before we got our winter clothes on the troop ship, in actual fact, looking back, I think it was in Britannia camp that we actually got kitted out, fully kitted out, with all the things that was necessary for going into up to the front, to coin a phrase. And then we did a little bit of training there, as I recall. But it's really a kitting out depot, I think, more than anything else. And to see everybody, you get everybody together and separate into the various sections, platoon, etc. So I believe that's the purpose of a transit camp, you see.
Where is this Britannia camp?
I can't tell you exactly. All I can say it was somewhere between Poussin and the front line. It was well behind the line, and it was probably near to the depot where the train from Poussin stopped. I don't know the name of a village there or anything, but it was a well-known camp, Britannia camp, as a transit area.
What was the weather like when you got there?
It was relatively mild, really. I think you could compare it with English weather. The cold certainly hadn't set in. You know, I remember sitting out on a night time. You know, it hadn't set in then. So it was pretty mild, I believe. You know, or like an English climate. Not too hot and not too cold.
And how long did you spend at Britannia camp?
Only, as I recall, possibly 3 nights. That's all. And then we moved up to not exactly the front line, but up to the active area. Once we got organised and got our kitted out and everything, then you was on your way.
Whereabouts was this active area that you were moved to?
The active area. I'm not exactly sure of the place it was called, but it was about, I would think, 3 miles behind the lines, and where we went under bivouac. It was under bivouac, so we must have been well back away from the line. And we was there for possibly a week, again doing our training and the usual routine.
Could you hear firing from where you were?
We could hear it in the distance, and you could see the flashes of shells, etc. Yeah, although it was some distance away.
What were conditions like in this area, so close to the front line, from the point of view of terrain and so on?
It was pretty good. It wasn't very comfortable because we was under bivouacs, which was basically a two-man tents, just like a little camping tent, about 3 foot high. And so it wasn't very comfortable. But fortunately, again, the weather hadn't broken, so it was a pretty mild climate. In fact, we used to make fires on a night and sit round and have a can of beer or something. And so it wasn't too bad. We got by okay in that. Although the only uncomfortable thing about it was sleeping in these little bivouac things, which was hardly made for two men, really, not with all your equipment. Ridiculous.
What were you told that you were about to do? Were you told that you were about to actually go into the front line itself?
Yes, we knew it was only a matter of time before we was moved up to the front line. And after we'd been there, I think about a week, we was called together and we was told that we'd be moving out the following day, we'll say. And we went to a place called Yongdong. This was the name that was got. We hadn't the faintest idea what we were going to at all.
What did you go to, actually?
Well, we moved up to the front line on this pretty big hill overlooking the Samichun Valley, which was called Yongdong. It turned out it was a relatively quiet area. Probably they sent you there with that in mind, knowing that it was a pretty quiet area. And from there we did our usual patrols and what have you. We relieved the Australians. I remember I was on the advance party, and for the first couple of nights I was doing patrols with the Australians and living in their bunker with them until the rest of the battalion moved up.
What impression of the Australians did you get?
They seemed totally different from the British Army. There was more at ease with everything, and they seemed grown men compared to us, who was young lads of 19. And when you get a few 19, they are basically lads, aren't they? But these was grown men, and that, I thought, was the difference. So they seemed to be in control of everything and not relying on other people telling them what to do. That was my first impression I got, and it was quite good, really. They'd got it all organised and pointed things out to us, and it was pretty good.
What type of things did they point out to you?
Well, when you move into, say, the front line, obviously you'd never been in a situation like that before. And you have to live there, of course, 24 hours a day. So there's so many things that you've got to know. That's apart from the enemy, etc., but you have to know how, where to get your food, the best way to eat your food, and the best way to make your tea, and the best way to make your beds, and the best way to make a fire, and all kinds of things like that. You know, there's